to get a little nerve, a little bit of backbone. I'm going to urge everyone to write this number down, 202-225-3121. 202-225-3121. Call Washington. Tell your Democratic member to get some backbone. This is Mark Levin, signing off.
This is the Quality News Network. The European Union just became stronger today with the stroke of a pen. EU leaders signed a historic treaty in Lisbon today that creates a replacement constitution and a new president. Germany, France, and Poland have all pledged to be the first countries to ratify it, so new reforms can take place by the year 2009. The European Union will boycott next month's U.S. climate talks unless America budges on its current position at the UN conference in Bali. European delegates want the White House to accept a range of numbers concerning reduction of greenhouse gas emissions. It is a day of reckoning for the world of Major League Baseball, as some of the league's brightest stars are named in the Mitchell Report on illegal steroid use. More than 50 players are identified, including veteran star pitcher Roger Clemens and newly indicted Barry Bonds. The Mitchell Report took 20 months to complete. It was compiled by former Senate Majority Leader George Mitchell. He was hired by Baseball Commissioner Bud Selig. Mitchell recommends that no punishment be given. Selig says he'll deal with each player on a case-by-case basis. A mistrial has been declared in Miami, Florida, in the case of seven defendants charged with attempting to blow up the Sears Tower in Chicago. The jury cleared one defendant, but was unable to reach a verdict on the other six. Prosecutors say they possibly will try the suspects, known as the Liberty City Seven, again next year. Democratic presidential candidates debated for the last time on the same stage before Iowa caucus on January 3rd. Rival candidates called for an end to the Iraq War and for higher taxes on the wealthiest Americans. Russia says contracting disputes with Tehran have been resolved, now ready to announce a timetable for construction of Iran's first nuclear power plant. The House narrowly approved a ban on waterboarding as a legal interrogation technique, the technique already outlawed by the U.S. Army Field Manual and the Geneva Convention. Another deadly bombing this morning in Mogadishu. At least 57 people have been killed or wounded in northeast India. Officials are blaming local insurgents for today's bombing of a passenger train. The U.S. State Department says it'll cut the number of diplomats in Washington and embassies abroad by 10%. Very soon. You're listening to the Quality News Network, a check of business just ahead. Now this message.
Did you know 1 billion adults around the world cannot read? Two-thirds are women, many prohibited from learning. The rate of illiteracy is declining, but the number who can't read has been increasing. These are more than just numbers, they're people. They're your friends, neighbors, and even your family. Consider these numbers. In America, if you didn't speak English in your home, you're 44% more likely to be reading below the most basic level. If you didn't complete high school, the chances are good that you can't read. 85% of prisoners are illiterate, as are the kids who wind up in juvenile court. Here are the facts. If you can read, you can learn, get a better job, and make more money. If you can't read, you can't learn, you can't find a good job, you can't make a decent living. Choose smart. Learn to read. If you're out of school, find a literacy program through your local library.
This message on literacy has been brought to you as a public service by the Quality News Network. For more information, please contact your local library.
JetBlue announced that Lufthansa has agreed to take a 19% equity stake and gain a seat on the company board. Lufthansa is buying 42 million common shares of JetBlue for a total of $300 million. It represents the first significant investment by a European carrier in a U.S. domestic airline. Shareholders of the Dow Jones & Company gave approval for its sale to media mogul Rupert Murdoch for $5 billion. The deal is set to close later today in New York City. A new management team was named last week. Les Hinton is the new CEO. Drug maker Merck recalling more than a million doses of a vaccine commonly given to young children. Company says some of its vaccine may be contaminated, although no cases have been reported as yet. Costco posting an 11% bump in quarterly profit. The discount giant credited an increase in membership as more Americans sought out cheap gas and food. Dow Chemical announcing it'll raise $9.5 billion and form a new joint petrochemical venture with a state-sponsored Kuwaiti company. Light sweet crude oil trading at $92.25 a barrel. At today's close of Wall Street, the Dow up 44 points to end at 13,517. NASDAQ down 2.5 points at 2668. The S&P 500 up nearly 2 at 1488. And there's always more at our website, QualityNewsNetwork.com. I'm Barbara Lewis.
Now, Head On with Bob Kincaid. Head On is brought to you every night by the West Virginia District Council of Carpenters and Millwrights. Union Carpenters and Millwrights, they're building the American dream. Free speech isn't free if you don't use it, so call Bob now at 1-877-4-HEAD-ON. That's 1-877-443-2366. Now, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy. Welcome, welcome, welcome. I feel like I've just gotten home from a big old tent revival listening to Mark Levine go the way he did today. Kind of shocking when you that calm, reserved exterior gets peeled away and you find out that there's a little bit of Hulk glory fire under the skin of the guy who must surely be considered our most considered, and phlegmatic host. I thought nothing would shake Mark Levine, but apparently that's not so. And you know, it's a good time for Mark to do that, because for God's sakes, if not now, when? If not over this, over what? I guess for me, look, I'm jaded. I made a promise a long, long time ago that it'd be harder on this Democratic majority than I had ever been on a Republican majority in Congress, because we know that they are of what they should be capable, because we know the good spirit, good energy, and good soul that was behind putting them in power. And that's who they're slapping down with their absence of spine, with their absence of courage, with their Stockholm syndrome, as referenced by Mark, as mentioned by Congressman Charlie Rangel. That's what it is. It is. It's something any good old boy can recognize. You know when. Well, you know when you see. When a dog comes up to you, and it's a dog you don't know, maybe it doesn't have a collar on it, and you reach down to pet it, and it flinches, because every time someone has reached down to it, it has usually been to hit it, or beat it, or smack it, you know that that dog has been abused. Well, that dog is the Democratic Congress, living every instant of every day in abject mortification, utter terrifying fear of George Bush and the predilection of the Republican Party for calling them names. They understand, you see, that if they don't give the money to George W. Bush for his filthy occupation of Iraq and his cronies and buddies in KBR and Halliburton, that George W. Bush, and really, I mean, they know this down in their souls. There's no doubt. They understand the character of that pig-eyed, jug-eared little lout who occupies 1600 Pennsylvania Avenue. They know it. And they know that although the money is there to bring the troops home, and they know it, and George knows it, and everybody on the Hill knows it, the American people don't necessarily know it, because the American people are plugged in to the reruns of reality shows and so forth. And as a consequence, the Pelosis and the Reeds and the Hoyers of this world, of our party, know that if they don't provide the money for George's filthy occupation to go forward, the plundering both of Iraq and our treasury, they know that George W. Bush will gleefully let the troops sit in Iraq, will let our Navy bob back and forth on the tides of the Indian Ocean and the Persian Gulf and the Arabian Sea, and leave them there to die. And then say, well, I didn't have any choice. The Democrats decided to kill the troops. They left your army there to rot. They left your Uncle Bobby there, little fella, because they hate the troops. And the Democrats have no clue on how to win that offensive battle. They have no idea of how to communicate with the American people, no idea of how to deal with a media that they believe, and perhaps rightly so, are openly hostile to the Democratic-controlled Congress. And so, as a consequence, they cave and cave and cave and cave and cave. Sometimes I feel like I've said all of this before, and maybe I have. But in caving, who have they killed? What is the name of the soldier, the sailor, the Marine, the corpsman? What is his name? What is her name? What is he or she dreaming of right now? Are they there and they're wanting to come home, but they won't because the Democrats lack the nerve to force this war to an end, this occupation? Or, more in line with that newspaper article I read from, and I think you may have also heard it on Malloy's program, are they in between sheets right now, nodding off, or sitting at the corner of a bar somewhere, or out in a field in a tractor, getting the ground ready for spring? They're in all of those places. And they're in Baghdad in the Green Zone. And they're in Al-Anbar province. And they're at Nineveh. Nineveh. Ancient seat of the royal power of that region. Where blood and death are nothing but another chapter in a seemingly endless epic of gore and destruction and trading of power from one people, yea, verily, unto another. All of those places. A mother hunkers over a hot stone fixing bread, as it's been done for 8,000 years, longer in that region, in fact, than fundamentalist Christians believe that there has been a planet Earth. and she'll be dead before the Congress finds the nerve to end the occupation. That'll sober you up in a hurry when you start thinking in terms like that. It'll sober you up when you think about the guy three doors down who's going back and this time won't come back. And you look at him with new eyes, because you know that that vision is one that may be your last of that person. All because whipped dogs expect to be whipped, and the Democratic majority in the Congress are, in the purest sense of the word, whipped dogs. And it is sad. It is tragic. My God, it would break your heart, wouldn't it? It does, I know, because I see what gets said in the chat room, and I see the emails. And you ache for representation, for the representation that you thought you had elected. And it's mighty hard to swallow, because you have the courage. You have the nerve. You get up out of bed and you go to work and you deal with your day every blessed day, knowing that the deck is stacked against you. Knowing that, in fact, you're working to prop up an oil company. That you're working to subsidize the Monsantos of the world. The agri-giants, knowing that your taxes will support breaks for hedge fund managers, but not an antibiotic for a kid with a rotten tooth. You know that, and still you soldier on. Yeah. Tough to swallow, isn't it? Hard to imagine how you, who bust your ass for every blessed thing that you have, how it is that you can do that, but a gang of pampered multimillionaires in the Democratic majority in the Congress can't. Yeah, I get a little artsy-fartsy every now and then, and I'll haul out a poem or something, and I keep coming back to this. You've probably heard it before, but somehow or another it bears sharing with you again, by Edward Arlington Robinson. Whenever Richard Corey went downtown, we people on the pavement looked at him. He was a gentleman from sole to crown, clean-favored, and imperially slim. And he was always quietly arrayed. And he was always human when he talked. But still, he fluttered pulses when he said good morning, and he glittered when he walked. And he was rich. Yes, richer than a king. And admirably schooled in every grace. In fine, we thought that he was everything to make us wish that we were in his place. So on we worked, and waited for the light, and went without the meat, and cursed the bread. And Richard Corey, one calm summer night, went home and put a bullet through his head. But you see, there's a certain element of courage that is attributed to Richard Corey. One may argue that Richard Corey in that poem exhibited courage in what he did. Unfortunately, our Congress doesn't have that kind of courage. They don't have the moral fiber, if you will, to recognize that what they are doing is so atrocious and so shameful and so absolutely homicidally deadly to the people who put them in office to stop the homicides. Tough to swallow. Tough to swallow. Wow, that's a grim start to the program. Let's try this again. Maybe I should roll the intro music again. No. Let's move over. You know what I did after the programs last night? And I gotta admit, I was a little wore out. I mean, it's not like doing 5 hours of radio is the same thing as, you know, 15 miles on the Erie Canal and tote that barge and lift that bale and all of that stuff. But it is a little wearisome. So I will confess that when it was all over with, I was, you know, well, I don't know if you fully dig what goes on here to make all of this happen, but it requires a certain amount of energy. And so you're a little keyed up when you're done, even if you're licked. So I poured a couple of fingers of brown liquor in a glass. I did. I confess it. I am a man of many flaws, and that is one of them. And I sat back and I watched the Republican debate all the way through. And you know what? I was amazed. I was stunned. I was shocked. I also watched the Democratic debate today. But watching that debate, I couldn't help but notice, and please understand, this gags my gut to even say it. I watched that debate. And I gotta tell you, the repiglickins were a lot more polished. The policy, of course, remains sickening. It's disgusting all the way around to see the way. But the thing is, I was able to sit there and watch it and imagine, sort of put my place, because this is, you know, the way I live my life and the way the inside of my skull works. I was able to put myself in the place of an average American, or perhaps average Iowan, sitting at home and watching these Republicans talk their crap and I realized that it's all platitudes. It's like getting filled up on marshmallows, you know what I mean? And I was sort of taken aback when I realized that this is the kind of stuff that sells to the crowd that watches reality television and gets their news from Entertainment Tonight. Now, Willard Romney he was polished as polished could be. Every hair meticulously put in place with that bowl of olive oil and that fork. Rudy Giuliani, I don't think the American people connect with Rudy. Fraud Thompson, anybody who's ever been south of the Mason-Dixie line knows Fraud Thompson, because they know his archetype. And that's what we're talking about here. These were all archetypes, not real people, but archetypes, models of what they were trying to project. Automatons, if you will, mannequins with robot innards. But the critical point is that the robots were all saying what America wants to hear. And America wants to hear that everything's going to be okay. America wants to hear that that we will never get up on another Tuesday morning and see jumbo jets flying into buildings. We want to be told that, whether that is an actual reality or not. And that's what it was. It was getting stuffed on marshmallows. And you know what? I understand why. I really clearly understand why the Reverend Mike Huckstrebe is leading the polls by such a margin in Iowa. I understand that because I grew up in the Southern Baptist Church. And I can spot that con from a mile away. He's mild. He's friendly. He's like your neighbor. He's not all puffed up and polished like Willard Romney. He's not a tired old redneck like Fraud Thompson. He's not harsh and nasal and edgy like Rudy Giuliani. You just can't imagine Reverend Mike Huckstrebe having the cops ferry his mistress around town. And he's mellower. He talks a lot of the same stuff, but he's mellower than Ron Paul, who just, you know, still comes across as just a little crazy. And Alan Keyes, oh, mother, Alan Keyes. I for those of you who aren't in the headonradionetwork.com chat room, I posted a question in there, and I directed it to the home office of the Gay Agenda, because Peter Godbold, the world's most fabulous LGBT conversation host, is in there right now, and of course he keeps the gay agenda inside a mayonnaise jar, inside a safe in the back of the closet there at his secure, undisclosed location in the Deep South. And I just asked, does Alan Keyes set off your gaydar? And Peter responded, oh my God, I can detect him with two tin cans and a string. And of course, that is always the case with someone who is so rampantly homophobic like Alan Keyes. Because he did. I mean, he was flailing his arms around. I wouldn't have been surprised if a big neon light had popped up over his head going, closet gay, closet gay, closet gay, closet gay. Because he is. Is it really tattooed there, Peter? The gay agenda? Oh, my God. But I could suddenly understand why it is that Americans swallow this stuff. Because they want to. The American people want desperately to believe that everything is okay. They don't want a leader. They don't want a genius. They want a liar. And from left to right or right to left, every single... They might have a little bit of difference among themselves here and there on the issues and topics of the day. But what they had in common, those people on that stage in Des Moines yesterday, those Republicans, is that they are all liars. I heard how the free market was going to solve education problems. I heard how free markets, the free market was going to insure children. You know, free, because it's a free market. No, not really. I heard I heard Willard Romney take personal credit for every intelligent child in Massachusetts. You would think he was going around and tutoring every last one of them. Then I heard the Reverend Mike Huckstraby take credit for the smart children in Arkansas. And all right, Yankees, quit giggling. There are some. And I heard the Reverend Mike Huckstraby calmly say that he wants everybody, all the students to have, in addition to math and science and English and reading, writing, and arithmetic, he wants them to have art class and music. Now, never mind the fact that the most outrageous music they'll learn to play in the Reverend Huckstraby's band may be a hot bass line and a version of Nearer My God to Thee, but everybody needs music class. Duncan Hunter, just watching. So, you know, I invite your thoughts, your comments, but I cannot help being sort of convinced that the Democrats may have a bigger problem in the presidential realm than they think they do. Because I'll tell you this much, in terms of image and polish, and you have no idea how it grieves me to say this, the Republicans had it all over the Democrats. We were flounging and fumbling and and awing all over the stage today. And of everybody up there, I prefer generally, because, you know, Dennis wasn't there, so I'd have to say of everybody up there, I generally prefer John Edwards, but I'll tell you a little secret. You know who the sharpest-looking guy on the stage was? Sharpest-looking person on the stage was? Not Barack, not Hillary, and not John Edwards. The sharpest, most presidential-looking person on that stage, most presidential sounding, most ready to take the oath and go into 1600 Pennsylvania Avenue and get some business done, was, beyond a shadow of a doubt, and please understand that it grieves me to say this about an unmitigated prostitute for the banking industry and the credit card industry, Joe Biden. Really, no kidding. And that just kind of surprised me. But it's a horse race, and Joe Biden is no more allowed to be considered a potential winner than Dennis Kucinich is. The media have decided that this is a two-way horse race, and no other horses need apply, light, dark, or otherwise. But the Democrats do have a problem. And it's a polish problem, and it is a communicating with America problem. There were sacrifice questions put to the Republicans yesterday, and ain't nobody got a sacrifice. Oh, heck no, it's all Frisbees and wheat checks. Same question was put to the Democrats today, and the Democrats couldn't run out there fast enough to say how much we have to sacrifice, which, I might add, is true. We can have small sacrifices now, voluntarily, or great big ugly ones in the not too distant future, about which we will have no say so. But as between the two, who do you think 72 IQ, Dancing with a Millionaire watching America is going to feel better about? I submit to you that the answer is a terrifying one. Let's go to the phones. Hey, who have I got? Oh, they quit on me. So, you know, chime right in. You know the number, 877-443-2366, 877, the numeral 4, head on. That's toll-free if you've got a long-distance unlimited plan and can save us a nickel or a buck by doing it on your own. It's 304-658-5453. Email just blows right in to bob@headonradio.com, and I invite you to let me know your thoughts. Any way you see it. We'll take a little break and come back. You're listening to America's Liberal Voice, America's listener-supported liberal voice. You're listening to The Horn. I'm Bob Kincaid.
I don't mind if you just keep on rolling away on a distant sea, because I don't love you and you don't love me. Cause a commotion when you come to town, give them a smile and they melt. Having lovers and friends is all good and fine, but I don't like yours and you don't. Got a problem, and you lay. I got a woman calling up pain. We moved about, we always be friends. How could we know how much it was in?
Sweetie, I love you, but those jeans have got to go.
Yeah, I know. Grab me a pair next time you go to the store, would you?
No.
Huh?
I'm not going there anymore. I can't stand it.
What do you mean?
It's just awful, honey. The only smile in that building is that big yellow face. Everybody else looks miserable, and I can't find anything there that's made in our country. That bothers me.
Well, nobody makes clothes in America anymore.
Au contraire, mi amigo. There's a ton of American-made clothing at No Sweat.
Well, where's this No Sweat store? Out at the mall?
No, silly. I found them at HeadOnRadioNetwork.com. There's a link there. I already ordered some great workout gear, and I also got you some new jeans. They'll be here in a couple of days. Surprise.
HeadOnRadioNetwork.com?
Uh-huh. Just click on the No Sweat banner. You're right there. Helps union workers and helps support America's other liberal network. Cool, huh?
I knew listening to The Horn was a good idea.
Whose idea?
Your idea, dear. All the good ones are.
Union made? No sweat. Great prices? No sweat. Great looks? No sweat. No sweat at HeadOnRadioNetwork.com. Click the banner. Do the right thing.
I'm Matt Rothschild, the editor of the Progressive Magazine, with my progressive point of view, which you can also grab off our website over at progressive.org. So I watched the Republican debate, the last one before the Iowa caucuses, but the first one I forced myself to see, and I gotta say I wasn't impressed. There was Alan Keyes back from the dead and acting unhinged, and there was crazed Tancredo saying the first thing he'd do in office would be to free Ignacio Ramos and Jose Campion, two agents who were convicted of covering up the shooting of a Mexican drug smuggler. McCain seemed sedated and exhausted. Romney was Mr. Smooth with a polished answer to every question, but not a lot inside. He did confess he wasn't lying awake at night, worrying about how the rich were going to pay their taxes, though, which brought Fred Thompson in a rare moment of levity to say he wished he was in Romney's bracket and didn't have to worry. But since when is Fred Thompson scrimping to make ends meet? As for Mike Huckabee, I don't know what all the commotion's about. He certainly didn't sparkle. All that he offered was some vacuous statements about the need to rise above partisanship, which is a fantasy. Only Ron Paul offered some real alternatives, denouncing the United States as an empire, decrying the fact that we have troops in more than 130 countries, and bravely saying that we should bring the Navy back from the Persian Gulf, since Iran is not a threat. Why Ron Paul's a Republican at this late date was the only puzzle of the debate, which the Democrats won by default. I'm Matt Rothschild. And that's how I see it.
I'm back.
And just when you thought it was safe to go back to the dance floor, hugs, my little magpies. Strictly Confidential is live tonight at 9 p.m. Eastern.
Alrighty then. About 20 minutes before the hour, and we will take it straight to the phones. Jim is calling. And, Jim, welcome to the program.
Yeah, hi. How are you, sir?
I'm dandy. How about you?
Okay. Well, look, I don't mean to be contentious, but I happen to like Near Dear My God to be. It's one of my favorite hymns. Oh, well, it's the Episcopal hymn. And it was the last hymn that 1,500 people heard before their ship slipped beneath the waves and into history and out of the British Registry.
1912 or 1914 was that? I can't remember.
1912 on the morning of April 15th.
Right, so not exactly on the cutting edge of musical composition.
Nonetheless, it's a gorgeous old Episcopal hymn of Welsh origin, and I wouldn't care if they did play it. It would bother me a bit. But all these people of whom you speak are politicians.
They are that.
You got to keep one thing in mind. And when they're not kissing babies, they're stealing their lollipops. And none of these men have any concrete answer for all of our problems, any more than any mathematician can compute the value of pi and make it come out even, which we know is a transcendental figure without resolution.
Right. I understand all of that. What I'm talking about is the perception of the American people, however, Jim. And the American people are scared, they have been terrorized, literally terrorized, for almost 8 years now. And as a consequence of that, they want someone who will pat them on the head, give them a warm glass of milk, and tell them, don't worry about it, I'll take care of it.
Well, basically what you're talking about is what FDR did after the Depression in 1932. You want the American people need someone to tell them they have only the only thing they have to fear is fear itself, which is exactly what he did. And a lot of his success was due to the psychology of his fireside chats and his ability to communicate with people.
But he was also doing something concrete and substantive behind
it. His programs did not work in many cases. They were simply stopgap measures. As we all know, what brought America out of the Depression was the Second World War. That's what got got people back to work. And FDR had to fight hammer and tong, tooth and nail, for a number of his programs, like the NRA. That was declared unconstitutional by the Supreme Court.
Right.
And, of course, he tried to pack the court in 1936 from 9 to 13.
Got so spanked.
It wasn't all moonlight and balalaikas with FDR with a lot of people.
No, it wasn't. And I don't think most people who are familiar with that period of time necessarily think that it was. However, there was substance, whether it was the WPA or the CCC.
Viable means that put people back to work. You're certainly correct. And, these were good programs. And they did give people hope. And the fireside chats, I have a volume of all of them. I read them.
That's why I say watching that Republican debate was like, filling up on marshmallows.
Well, I don't even bother myself with these people. Because
I don't ordinarily, Jim. I don't either. But I just sat down last night and had a watch.
Well, I mean, hey, each man to his own thing, and that's great. But as far as I'm concerned, you're just going to hear point, counterpoint, and what can I say? And it's on both sides of the aisle. The Democrats, the same malaise is afflicting them as well. As far as I'm concerned, that's just my personal opinion.
Are you at that place where you just say whoever the Democratic nominee is, I'm voting for him or her, and to hell with them until then?
Possibly, yeah, because it really doesn't do me any good. I mean, it does not do me a world of good to get out there and get a case of the fan pies over one person does this and one person does that, and so that's about all I can do is to vote and to. That's where the rubber meets the road. That's all you can do. I mean,
vote and pray it gets counted.
Well, yeah, exactly. The rest, as far as I'm concerned, basically, in many cases, are these people who fret about the state, tales told by an idiot, signifying nothing.
I tend to concur. I do. However, because I am a part, you know, I guess I'm taking what the John Donne approach to it, because I am part of a greater whole, I want to know a little bit about how the whole is thinking. And if the whole is after whatever it was that was being offered in that debate yesterday, it leads me to greater theses and larger conclusions, one of which is we're screwed.
Well, I would like to not think that way. I would like to think there is light at the end of the tunnel, and I would like to think that we're not screwed.
I mean, that thing last night did have its humorous moments that almost made the investiture of the finite time that I put into it worthwhile. It was hilarious, Jim, to see these. You know, the only thing that was really missing from this was the little tiny car that delivered all these clowns, because they sat there and there was a question about spending and there was a question about deficits, and they all waxed the grandiloquently about the you know, we've got to cut spending and we got to cut the size of government, blah 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 blah. Not one time, Jim, was the name Bush uttered. Not once.
Would it have done any good to mention him, really? Remember the 11th commandment?
I do remember Reagan's 11th commandment, thou shalt not criticize a fellow Republican. However, if there really is that great American center of undecided voters and they're kind of independent and they're not Democrats anymore and they're not Republicans anymore, and you need to convince them that, you know, you're the guy, it seems to me it would ring a little bit hollow to stand there complaining about policies that you have slavishly supported for the 8 years that George Bush has been in office. That was the sort of bell ringing hypocrisy moment of the thing.
Well, I can understand that, but unfortunately, we can't undo one. You know, the movie theater rights and having ripped moves all, they're all our piety, they're all our wit, can change a single word, they cancel half a line. Is that not true?
In many ways, yes. However, I've been following mostly the Democrats, and you know, I spend a lot more time on cultural issues than I do political these days, because I'm frankly burned out on politics as what it sounds like you are, Jim.
But
you know, I had some time on my hands last night and I just needed to wind down a little bit, and I sat and I watched that debate and I was kind of surprised. It was I don't know, it was like going into the Hall of Mirrors, you know, and you just sort of stand there sort of slack-jawed at that one mirror that makes you look 9 feet tall and, you know, 6 inches wide, and then you move and suddenly you're 2 feet tall and 8 feet wide.
Well,
and
it's just like Alice through the Looking Glass or an infinity of mirrors, I don't know.
Yeah,
one thing that I heard yesterday that I wanted to add to this conversation, if you don't mind.
Sure.
And I'm sure you probably heard about it too, and I was listening to one of the San Francisco stations. I do here a morning, and apparently there was a 5-year-old kid who killed a bear, a 459-pound black bear, with what's called a youth rifle. And they had the kid on there, and he said, "I seen that bear in Arkansas." And I said, "Oh, Lord." And then his grandfather was interviewed, and they asked him what he thought about his grandson, Trey, shooting the bear. And after some reference to, I think it was Dave Crockett or some crap, he said, "When I found out he killed that bear, it just brought tears to my eyes." And I thought to myself, oh, shit. Oh, shit. That's all I could think of. You know, is that what we are reduced to listening to and, you know, and having these people like that? I mean, they had a big to-do about the local from the Lowe's station about this 5-year-old. In the first place, what in the name of Almighty God is a 5-year-old boy doing with a weapon? And why would he kill a defenseless animal, basically, that probably has cubs somewhere? And, you know, and they're going to take it and skin it and probably walk on it for a while. And I just don't understand that type of mentality. And when other people hear this, and you can imagine what the pundits from the West Coast were having with this from the state of Arkansas. And, of course, you'll find people in your own state who will agree with what this guy did and think this little kid's a hero.
I've seen two trucks up at the checking station in the last month with bears in the back.
Well, I think it's horrible. And I tell you, they're beautiful creatures. I don't bother them. And if you don't bother them normally, they won't bother you.
Unless, of course, they've been run out of their
habitat because of people encroaching their territory.
And they do.
And, you know, I just thought to myself, now what, and I talked to a friend of mine who's a member of the House of Delegates, and you know, and I'm not going to mention anybody's
name,
but he said that kids start to kill at 5 years old, and at the age of 45, he's going to be killing, and at the age of 55, he's going to be killing, as he is going to be at 35 and 25, or he was. And he said, it's a crying shame.
But, the other side of that is... forgive me, Jim, if I say that I get a little, I don't know, I'm a little put off by urbane condescension of maybe somebody in Frisco thinking that was, I don't believe in putting firearms in five-year-olds' hands. But I also do recognize that the hunting culture in rural America is profoundly entrenched. For some people, it's something that has been handed down generationally.
Well, I understand that. I grew up in the South too, where the hunting culture is extremely
vibrant,
well-rooted, well-founded. And grew up in a house that was filled with all types of weapons, Ithaca shotguns, Remington Model 70 Winchesters, and a very good Muslim myself. One of the first things I learned. But you know, I'll tell you something. Basically, what I hunted, and I never killed anything. I never wanted to, at least not an animal. I never wanted to. I see no pleasure in it because I could not understand how someone would have a chance when yours truly, as a technically superior human being with a technically superior weapon, what chance would this animal have against a weapon that fired a projectile with so many, with such muzzle velocity? I just couldn't quite see it. I could not enjoy it. The only thing I could ever hunt with would be, well, until later days, would be a camera.
Yeah.
My motto was to take nothing but pictures and leave nothing but footprints.
No, I understand every last bit of that, and then you by raising this issue, you've taken me to a rather interesting place in talking about the Reverend Mike Huxterby.
Don't underestimate him. He is.
Oh, I'm not. Believe me, Jim. That's the thing I'm trying to get across. I am not underestimating that man.
Well, I want to say this, Bob, and you're not going to agree with this probably, but that's personal conversation. We don't always have to agree. We can agree to disagree. You mentioned that people in this country are scared, okay?
Mm-hmm.
And this is my own personal theory, and you can call it what you wish, ball of ash, whatever, I don't care, it's fine. But a lot of times I think people in times of trouble, they just become real firm believers in the fact that the minds of them have become so confounded that they cannot solve their problems. And they find great comfort and solace in religion.
Oh, I don't take any issue with that whatsoever.
And I am one of those people. I'll be the first to admit that. And, you know, that's just my own personal belief system.
I just don't personally believe that it has any business in the White House.
Well, I know that. I think in the hands of the right person, it could. Not the hands of a phony person like George Bush. I don't think he has
Or Huxterby. I mean, dig it. You brought up the hunting story, and it reminded me of something I heard the other night. Huxterby gave was given a talk or a speech or something in some church somewhere, And he described a hunting expedition he'd been on out west. And he described killing an antelope. And he said, and I'm not kidding, Jim, I'm not making this up. He said that the angels took that bullet to its target.
Well. I mean, you know, you're going to find all, like I say, these people are politicians, and when they're not kissing babies, they're stealing their lollipops. And if he wants to get up and say stuff like that, that the angels guide his bullets, then fine. I mean, to me, it's just more of an example of,
But somewhere along the way, what, and I'm not saying it's necessarily with regard to his angels and bullets question, but at some point, do we not, as decent human beings, have a duty to start? Because the point is, the media are not calling him on this garbage. The media are giving him a pass and just sitting there in dumbstruck amazement at him right now. And they won't, you know, he's not even catching any long-term grief for this business about declaring in 1992. And you know the history of the disease as well as I do, if not better. 1992, not 1982, but 1992, Jim, declaring that he wanted to quarantine AIDS HIV patients.
Yeah, I know all of his history about that, and this is just horrible. He's the one who lost all that weight, wasn't he?
Yeah.
Okay. I thought his name was familiar because I know he first sort of got into the limelight because he would, I don't know. I think it was old IMS or somebody was talking to him about losing a lot of weight. And, well, you know, you've had these types of people before. You've had Billy Sunday. You've had Father Coughlin, the radio priest. You've had all types of
but
people.
They weren't viable presidential candidates, Jim. Isn't there a distinction?
Well, I guess so, but I don't think this man's really. Well, he may very well be a viable presidential candidate, but you know, I would like to think that you know, if in fact he is, that his sins will find him out, and that you know, eventually he will if he in fact is a charlatan, then he will be exposed for what he is. That's what I would like to think would happen.
Well, I noted that Mark Levine said just a few minutes ago before my program began, he said, I hope Mike Huckabee is the nominee. And you know what? I don't.
Well,
because having grown up in the Southern Baptist Church, I know what an almost mesmerizing effect a good Baptist preacher can have on a crowd.
Well, what do they do?
I guess maybe any preacher, but
I mean, are these people who are? I mean, is their mode of delivery and their cadence of speech so hypnotic that you are?
In a way, it is, Jim. Because if you were to compare from yesterday's debate for dog and pony show, there's nothing debate about it. But if you were to compare, say, Giuliani and McCain and Huckabee and Romney, I ran the Progressive there a few minutes ago, and I couldn't more thoroughly disagree with Matt Rothschild, with whom I don't frequently disagree. I think he doesn't get it because perhaps of where he's from, but he does not understand how that tent revival motif can bring out the so-called beans and buttermilk or beans and cornbread crowd in the Deep South.
Well, you know, Bob, I've listened to Dr. Billy Graham, and I enjoy his sermon. I think he's a good man.
Well, I've heard a couple.
To the right place, I really do. I don't think he's a charlatan like some of these others.
I've heard a couple of instances of Huckabee speaking, and you know what, Jim? He's right out of the same school. I mean, the mellifluous, somewhat self-deprecating, humorous, and you never ever feel the hand in your back pocket.
Well, I've never felt that Billy Graham had intended to do that. I think that Dr. Graham has tried to do a lot.
No, but I'm talking about style, Jim.
Well, okay. Well, you talk. All right, fine. But I'm talking about the mission of the band. I mean, Mr. Huckabee or whatever his name is, his goal might be to get into the White House by whatever means or he at his disposal. But with Billy Graham, I've always thought he was trying to make the world a better place. and he's a very kind man. I don't agree with his son, but I like Billy Graham always has. And I'm not ashamed to say that, and I'm not ashamed of my religion.
No, I got a little bit of a problem with Billy Graham sitting around knee-slapping with Richard Nixon talking about them Jews. But, you know, I guess we all...
Billy Graham has atoned for that, too. He has.
I wasn't there, so I don't know if he has or not.
Yes, he did publicly, and he realized that many of the things he had with Richard Nixon. Of course, could you imagine having the...
Of course, he's also credited with the conversion of George W. Bush as well.
Bob, these are things I can't speak to, okay? All I can speak to is speaking to you from my heart as one man to another. And I can't help it if maybe Big George Bush may have been one of Billy Graham's, I think Billy Graham counseled Bush when he was drinking so heavily. I think that's one of the things that roles that he had to play there. I don't know. I wasn't there. But I'm just talking about the man, and, you know, and even though I'm not of your background as far as religion is concerned, he has always meant a great deal to me, and, you know, I've listened to him, and, you know, I thought he basically, his only mission was to try to make the world a better place, not to live in any type of Pat Robertson or Jerry Falwell opulence and things of that nature, but he was simply trying to help people. That's all.
I understand that, Jim, but the point that I was trying to make is that stylistically, Huckabee comes off in much the probably the Billy Graham comparison is better than any other evangelical comparison you could make when trying to talk about Huckabee.
Well,
because it's not sinners in the hands of an angry God. He's not hopping up and down. He's not flailing his arms. He's not wiping the sweat from his brow with a white hanky or anything like that. Speaking in tongues, handling snakes, or drinking strychnine. He is working the classic old style Southern shtick, and he works it very, very well. And I would suggest to the Democrats out there that they be very, very cognizant of him, because the fact of the matter is South Carolina and Iowa can grease the skids for him in a big way. If he makes it to Super Tuesday at the front of the pack, I fear that everybody else may very well just wind up going home. And I got a feeling that you put him on a stage against Senator Clinton, she's going to be a whole bunch smarter. But he's probably going to come off the winner.
I would dare say so. But like I said before, people in this country are very frightened, and many of them have turned to an alternate faith or an alternate source of comfort, because they find none in their newspapers, they find none in their newscasts, they find none in the world today.
Yeah, it's either numb up, or look for, you know, that opiate of the masses sort of comfort.
Well, if that, you know, hey, whatever works for it, that's on an individual basis.
Yeah, it absolutely is, and that's what I keep trying to get across, is I don't give a darn what people believe. I just don't want them trying to make public policy out of it.
Well, it's happened in the past before, but we'll just have to wait and see, and who knows, one can never tell. But, I don't have anything else to add to the conversation, but anyway, I will leave you where I found you and wish you a good evening and have a good broadcast, and don't try to be too pessimistic if you can possibly help it, okay?
Well, that's what the two fingers of brown liquor were for last night.
I understand. I've been that route many times myself.
You take care, Jim.
And alcohol can be more than milk and can to justify the ways of God's man, right?
And all God's children said amen.
That's right. Good night.
Bye now. All right, fun first hour, everybody. Jump right in if you want to. 877-443-2366, 304-658-5453. This is America's listener-supported liberal voice. This is The Horn. Back after the news.
live out of town in that low-down rain. Watching Good Time Charlie friends driving me insane. Down on shady Charlotte Street, the green lights look red. Wish I was back home on the farm in my feather bed. Get myself a rocking chair to see if I could lose them thin, dime, hard time down on Church Street Blues. Yesterday's news, folded up page 21, stuck it in my shoes. Gave me nickel to pour my good turn for today. Folded up my old billfold and threw it far away. And I got myself a rocking chair to see if I could lose them thin, dime, hard time, hell on Church Street Blues.
This is the Quality News Network, compiled by former Senate Majority Leader George Mitchell, the Major League Baseball illegal steroid use report took nearly 2 years to complete. Mitchell was hired by Baseball Commissioner Bud Selig. He recommends that no player be punished because of that report. Selig says he'll deal with each player on the list on a case-by-case basis. A mistrial has been declared in Miami, Florida, in the case of seven defendants charged with attempting to blow up the Sears Tower in Chicago. The jury cleared one defendant but was unable to reach a verdict on the other six. Prosecutors say they possibly will try the suspects, known as the Liberty City Seven, again next year. Democratic presidential candidates debated for the last time on the same stage before the Iowa caucus on January 3rd. Rival candidates called for an end to the Iraq War and for higher taxes on the wealthiest Americans. For the first time in the primary race, Barack Obama has pulled even with former frontrunner Hillary Clinton, with Iowa voters both at just over 30%. The European Union just became stronger today. EU leaders signed an historic treaty in Lisbon that creates a replacement constitution and a new president. Germany, France, and Poland have all pledged to be the first countries to ratify it, so new reforms can take place by the year 2009. The House narrowly approved a ban on waterboarding as a legal interrogation technique. The technique is already outlawed by the U.S. Army Field Manual and the Geneva Convention. Russia says contracting disputes with Tehran have been resolved now, and they are ready to announce a timetable for construction of Iran's first nuclear power plant. 2007 is statistically one of the warmest years on record, according to British climate experts reporting at the climate change conference in Bali. Despite the cooling influence of La Nina conditions, the past 11 months are the seventh warmest since 1850. The Northeast could get as much as a foot of snow today as an ice storm that battered the Midwest sweeps toward the coast. 33 deaths have been blamed on that winter system so far. In southwest Pakistan, two suicide bombings this morning near military checkpoints have killed at least 8 people. 18 have been wounded. And in northeast India, officials are blaming local insurgents for today's bombing of a passenger train. You're listening to the Quality News Network, a check of business just ahead.
Huelhauser talks to customers of First National, South Valley, and San Benito Banks, local members of the network of preferred community banks.
We're here to talk with people about their local banking.
So what do you look for when you decide where you're going to put all your millions?
Well, I haven't printed up enough to put it in the bank yet, but I guess for convenience, and pretty much it's like a grocery market. You get to meet the people there, and you build a little rapport with some of them.
You know, it's a local bank, but it's part of a network of local banks that give you big bank services.
Everything that I need as far as banking is concerned, they have it. Online banking is great for me. So I just like the services that they offer.
You ever taken your dog Cindy to the bank?
As a matter of fact, when I went to open my account, she was with me.
Ah!
Yeah, I wouldn't be surprised if we have a horse come through one of these days. We got a lot of cowboys come in and out of here, too.
Above and Beyond Banking from the network of preferred community banks. Available locally at First National Bank of Central California, South Valley National Bank, and San Benito Bank.
Shareholders of the Dow Jones & Company gave approval for its sale to media mogul Rupert Murdoch for $5 billion. The deal is set to close later today in New York City. A new management team was named last week. Les Hinton is the new CEO. JetBlue announced that Lufthansa has agreed to take a 19% equity stake and gain a seat on the company's board. Lufthansa is buying 42 million common shares of JetBlue for a total of $300 million. It represents the first significant investment by a European carrier in a U.S. domestic airline. Lehman Brothers, the nation's largest underwriter of mortgage-backed bonds, posted a decrease in quarterly profit. Fees for investment banking and equity trading buoyed up its bottom line, beating Wall Street expectations. Drug maker Merck has recalled more than a million doses of a vaccine commonly given to young children. Company says some of the vaccine may be contaminated, although no cases have been reported as yet. And Costco posted an 11% bump in quarterly profit. The discount giant credited an increase in membership as more Americans sought out cheap gasoline and food. At today's close of Wall Street, the Dow Jones Industrial Average up 44 points to end at 13,517, NASDAQ nearly 2.5 points down, and the S&P 500 up nearly 2. There's always more at our website, qualitynewsnetwork.com. I'm Barbara Lewis.
It's your second hour in the Liberal Sandbox, and you're head on with Bob Kincaid.
You are so right, B-Rez, 10 minutes after the hour. And I don't know, maybe somehow I just didn't get it across. But while I guess there's early polling data, and I frankly don't give a tinker's damn about polling data, to suggest that all three of the so-called major Democratic candidates would just stomp the life out of Brother Mike Huckstrebe. I don't believe in taking any opponent lightly. Ask Michigan about Appalachian State. Ask USC about Stanford. Ask my beloved Mountaineers about a 4-7 Pitt team. Do not take an opponent lightly. Speaking of sports, of course, I'm sure you've heard the big news. Yeah, no, the big news? You mean about out of the global warming conference at Bali? No, the important big news. The big news, you know, the stunning revelation that most of Major League Baseball is juiced. Duh. You know, one year, a guy's so damn skinny he has to run around in the shower to get wet, and if he sticks his tongue out and stands sideways, he looks like a zipper. And the next year he looks like Popeye on a spinach binge. No, there's no drugs involved with there. What did you have to say, Mr. Clemens? Sort of does make everything sort of pull into focus, though, when you think about him throwing that baseball bat a few years back at the runner heading down to first. Who was that, Mike Piazza? Yeah. It was Piazza, wasn't it? A normal unmessed with in the head guy probably doesn't do that. On the other hand, a guy who's juiced out of his mind on roids, throwing the bat is the... Man, that's the shallow end of the anger management pool. So, you know, we understand now how Roger Clemens was able to extend his career and expand his bank accounts. Better living through chemistry, baby. Better living through chemistry. Yeesh. Let's see who's on the phone here. Hey, welcome to the program.
Hi, this is Juanita.
Hey, Juanita, darling, how are you?
I'm all right. How are you?
If I was any better, well, I couldn't be any better.
I wanted to kind of respond to Jim talking about Billy Graham.
Mm-hmm.
Just a couple of things that I've seen on TV. When we had the impeachment of Bill, which was worse than killing millions of people and all that kind of good stuff. Anyway, they said something to him about Bill. See, they were, he's known Bill since he was, I think, in his teens. And I don't know how that came about, but anyway, he knew the family and all. But he said, well, I don't doubt it. He said, he's a good-looking man. A lot of girls like him, you know. That's what he said. So, you know, then about 2 years ago, I saw where he had Bill and Hillary on one of his crusades in New York City. And he said, well, he brought him and introduced him, and he said, I think Hillary would make a great president. So, you know, his son...
Franklin's a real sleaze merchant.
Well, he said, they asked him, they said about something about, you know, his son was talking about the Muslims, you know, being an evil religion. And he said, I don't agree with everything my son says. We don't think alike on everything. But anyway, the thing, I think his son and I know some others, you know, they were just in shock that he would have Hillary and Bill on his program. One of the crusades. And they said, well, you know, Bill's getting, he's getting feeble and he can't think straight. I just thought I'd bring that up. I thought it was sort of interesting.
Yeah, I just, you know, I'm sorry. I just take a dim view of anybody who becomes, makes himself a multimillionaire, basically selling nothing to people. I mean, do you realize if the James Robisons and Billy Grahams and the Oral Robertses of this world were actually in the business community, they'd be sued out. They'd be sued out of their last dime before the first year was up.
Yeah, I'm sort of like Jim. I don't really know a whole lot about it, but to me, I think Billy Graham is different. You know, I think he's got more character. But you know, I don't know. I don't know. I don't know what God thinks about all that. All that money that people have, and like the people they're investigating now. And I talked to this friend of mine who's a right winger, and I said, you know, they're being investigated by a Republican, a real fuddy duddy Republican, what I call a real Republican.
Yeah, Grassley.
Grassley, yeah. You know, I don't certainly don't agree, and he votes with Bush a lot, but he's what I would call a real Republican. And I said, Benny Hinn and Creflo Dollar, they're not wanting to cooperate. But I said, Joyce Myers is already sending her little thing. Not little, but, and she said, is Joyce Myers got a lot of money? I said, oh, honey.
As a buddy of mine says, Juanita, she's got enough money to burn a sopping wet elephant with $100 bills.
I just think that somewhere along the line, I don't know, it's just, I think it's obscene.
Well, it's certainly violative of all the provisions that Yeshua, the brown-skinned Palestinian day laborer, talked about. You know, the whole easier for a rich man to get through the eye of a needle, or the camel to get through the eye of a needle, than a rich man to get into the kingdom
right.
of heaven, all that stuff. But see, my thesis, Juanita, is that whether it's Creflo Dollar or Joyce Myers or Benny Hinn or Kenneth Copeland, or Oral Roberts, or James Robison, or Ernest Angley, or any of them, I don't think that there is a single one that actually believes the crap that they spout. They are in it for one thing and one thing only. And I extend this to Rick Warren and Joel Osteen and the people at New Life and all these mega churches. They are in it for one thing and one thing only, and that is the vast amounts of money that they can legally and tax-free. Man, that is the one that goes in gold, tax-free, reap from people who are afraid to otherwise live their own lives.
Well, now to me this connects. It may not make sense, but to me, in my mind, it connects. I accidentally saw this. Have you ever heard of a little priest from Asia called Peter Phan?
I got to say, I think I've missed out on him.
Phan.
Okay.
He's a Catholic priest, and I found him by chance on one of those oddball shows, giving lectures. And for some reason, I got to where I love to watch lectures. and especially, you know, something that I know a little bit about and I'd like to be educated on. And he was talking about the westernization of Christianity and how it has taken away from what real Christianity is.
I know, but that's such a tough call. I hear that a lot, what real Christianity is. That's a very fluid question, Juanita. We don't honestly know what real Christianity is because there are no surviving documents.
Well, he's talking about how it has been westernized is what I'm talking about. And see, that connects for me, because I think there's a lot of stuff in our, what we call over here, we call Christianity, I don't know if it's even close. I mean, I'm not the judge and jury of what real Christianity is. I don't mean that, but I think that,
well, the closest you can get
I go the simplistic thing with
the closest you can get, Juanita, is to read Paul's letters, because they are actually historically earlier than the Gospels.
Really?
And as a consequence of that, you can read in Paul's letters the accounts of how they held everything in common. They met in someone's house. The Eucharist was a communal meal. It wasn't a cracker and a sip of wine.
Right.
They were proto-communists, because again,
yeah,
they owned no property. They held everything in common.
Mm-hmm.
And that structure was untenable to men who wanted to consolidate not spirituality, but power, Juanita, power.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, that's the closest you can get. But, you know, what it boils down to is there are a lot of people out there who might have chosen the new Jesus religion because it wasn't quite as icky as saying becoming part of the Mithras cult. Because from what we understand, to be part of the Mithras cult, you had to stand in a pit and be bathed in bull blood. You know, ick. So, you know, instead you go once a week and you have a nice meal and you're a Christian and cool. You mean I don't have to get drowned in bull blood? Oh, no bull blood here. Cool, sign me up. I mean, that's really how it happened.
Yeah. Well, I have my own personal reasons for what I believe, but...
I mean, at the time that Christianity arose, Jesus was just another God born of just another virgin. That was apparently the hallmark of godhood, was that you were born of a virgin, and you couldn't, in the ancient world, and, you know, they were making strides towards scientific inquiry, but there was still a lot of ignorance and superstition. In the ancient world, you couldn't swing a dead cat and not hit somebody that had been born of a virgin. Really? I mean, that...
And not hit somebody that's been born of a virgin?
Yeah, all your major gods were born of a virgin.
Oh, okay.
I mean, you just couldn't play on the team unless you'd been born of a virgin. I mean, the Isis mythology, the Isis and Osiris and what, Re or Ra or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
Adonis was born of a virgin. It goes on and on. Mithras, maybe, I'm not sure. Maybe none of them were.
I know.
You know, it is kind of interesting, seeing as how St. Paul doesn't say a single word about Jesus being born of a virgin. Mm-mm, not one word. For him, Jesus becomes God on the cross. Not until then.
Like Kenneth Copeland and Joyce Myers and I know Creflo Dollar. Some of the teachings that they have is totally different from some of the churches about you talking about on the cross. Oh boy, have they got a different...
Well, Creflo Dollar and Kenneth Copeland and Joyce Myers and all those crowd, it's sort of a pop psychology thing, and far more that than anything approaching any sort of so-called orthodoxy. Benny Hinn and Creflo Dollar's... function and aim is not to save souls or to ensure the afterlife for anyone. It is to ensure a darn fine present life for themselves.
Yeah.
Rick Warren, Joel Osteen, the whole lot of them.
Mm-hmm.
Wow, I didn't mean to turn this into another prayer meeting edition. We're a day late.
Well, I just wanted to say that about Billy Graham. You know, Now, the one thing I never got into him because he, you know, was such a friend of Nixon's and all and everything, but, you know, I just thought I'd bring up that point that he did do that, and they don't know what to make of him. The people on the religious right don't know what to make of him. The ones that I know about. I don't know about all of them, but I know about some of them.
Well, that's got to be troublesome to the religious right. How could it not be? Because, after all, Hillary Clinton killed Vince Foster, if you ask half of them.
I mean, he had them on the
sure,
program.
Sure, absolutely.
There. I mean, he talked to them and everything, and then he said that Hillary would make a great president.
And the fact of the matter is, she might very well. She may very well. She would certainly make a far...
Anybody could do that.
She would make a far better president, Juanita, than any of those clowns standing on
right.
the stage running for the Republican nomination. Of that, I am absolutely 100% certain.
And I just say a couple of things about the Republicans running. When did Alan Kiss become a candidate?
Oh, I think he's been one for a while, but how he snuck in and wrangled an invitation, I'll never know. Yeah, I remember him announcing a couple of months back, but you know, and we thought we had a crazy one on our hands with Mike Gravel. Wow, you know.
Yeah. Mm. But you know, if they would let Mike Gravel talk about some other things, it might make a whole lot more sense.
Well, Mike Gravel makes sense for a little while, but then he starts talking about what the aliens told him or the flat tax
any
of that.
I hadn't heard that one.
I'm being facetious, but no, he starts talking crazy stuff like flat tax and so forth, and you realize that he's, you know, gone.
And Duncan Hunter, he's going to want us to all be eating, what's that chicken? He keeps on. Did you see when he was talking here a while back? This is before he was running for president, and he had to bring out the menu of the.
Oh yeah. He talked about what a fine menu they have at Guantanamo.
And pilaf rice and.
I love rice pilaf. Yeah, it's a good meal. Yeah, jeez. Yeah.
And he had them, and he was invited somebody up there to eat with him. He had two servants, you know.
Mm-hmm. And Tom Tancredo yesterday said that the first thing he'd do as president is to pardon a couple of rogue cops from prison.
Yeah.
Nice guys. Nice guys.
Oh well, I'll tell you.
And I think, you know, I think before he puts his sacred underwear on, they just his magic underwear, they just dip. Honest to God, they dip Willard Romney in goose grease or something, because he is so slick.
Didn't he though? He really is. He really is. That's a good word for him.
But he talks and he talks. Yeah. Well, I mean, they called Bill Clinton Slick Willie. Why the hell can't he be Slick Willard?
Yeah. Well, you know, when I heard him talking the other day on that, just heard. The audio of him, it sounded like Bush.
Well, God knows he's trying. I mean, he got a big old hug from George H.W. Bush Babs down at College Station, Texas, just last week.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, they ran up to him like they were going to adopt him or something.
Oh, yeah. Well, he wants Jeb to be his vice president. That's one of his picks. And so he'll be sorry if he does.
Oh.
I think.
Well, yeah. Look, the Bush family will bump anybody off, and it, you know, Reagan's just lucky he had Alzheimer's and they didn't have to.
Well, Lord knows. I mean, that the guy that shot him was his brother was a big friend, one of
the
other Bush boys. I don't know if it was Neil or the other one.
Yeah, well, the Hinckley family were great friends with the Bush family.
Yeah. So very interesting, isn't it?
It goes around and around and around,
mm-hmm.
Juanita.
Mm-hmm.
Juanita, it's awfully good to talk to you this evening. You take
too,
care now.
And you take care, and Godspeed.
Thanks. Bye.
Bye-bye.
You know, bless her heart, Agnes's lumbago's been acting up. She needs a little bit of Granny Clampett's rheumatism medicine, but I can't get her to take it. But she's been awake some nights, and you know, strange things happen at 3 a.m. when you're just hurting and laying on a couch, and you got a clicker in your hand. She has, I don't guess she's seen as much of it as what I've seen, but she looked at me with this sort of look of wonder in her eyes. And Bob, I saw some of the strangest preachers on TV last night. I looked and I said, well, honey, you know, you're taking muscle relaxers. Was the TV on? Yes, Bob, the TV was on, you jerk. Okay, and you saw strange preachers? Mm-hmm. Not surprised. Some woman who puts up all the scripture in Greek and Hebrew. And wow, I think I've got a wrong number here calling in on the production line. Yeah, this might be interesting.
Hello.
Hello.
Okay. What is this, a radio station?
It is. It's the Head On Radio Network. You're on the air.
Okay. I probably dialed the wrong number.
Oh, okay. Well, okay. Bye now.
Sorry. Bye.
Wrong radio station, I guess. Maybe she wanted to hear, you know, Lee Greenwood or something. But anyway, Agnes was kind of amazed at what she'd seen. And today she watched the Democratic debate. She watched it in the living room. I watched it back here. That's right, the Head On Radio Network, the only radio network that gladly lets telemarketers and wrong numbers on the air. She watched the Democratic debate, and that got her real upset. Of course, you know, if you were waiting around listening to the horn section and me filling in for John on All Foxed Up last night, you know that Agnes snuck in behind the microphone and made a brief appearance. See, you weren't here. You missed it. Huh. But, okay, let's go elsewhere. What do you say? Let's find something else to yammer on about. Interesting email. In regard to my conversation a couple of nights ago with Kate and Ann, we heard from our resident, literally, rocket scientist. He said, "You're so right. The anemic response to Katrina is intentional and occurs for two reasons. First, there is profit in the anemia. For example, a buddy contributor to Jeb Bush's campaigns won the contract to supply new pumps to the New Orleans levee system. These pumps straight up don't work. They are, well, it's kind of like Neil Bush's education software, isn't it? They're creating voucher charter school systems in place of New Orleans public schools, and they're getting lucrative contracts. Oh, that's another thing from the Republican debate yesterday. All the Republicans hate the, you know, oh, they hate the Department of Education, except for Mitt Romney, because using No Child Behind Left, he was personally responsible for every smart kid in Massachusetts. Second, this is consistent with their plan to wean us off government assistance. The right-wingers somehow think that in bad times all we need is charity. Of course, we can look back to 1929 to 1933 to see how well that worked out. Not. Closer to home, did you hear the news reports about Toys for Tots having a tough time? Oh, dear. According to a recent report I heard on the TV in the last 2 days or so, the Marines have far fewer demand for toys than they have toys for the demand. They're finding that folks who normally give are reluctant this year because of fears about their prospects. Further, right-wingers commonly conflate charity and the social safety net. They complain that charity is an individual church responsibility, not a governmental act. What they moronically, oh, I love that word, neglect is the idea that the social safety net is not charity. It is the actions that implement the federal government's responsibility for maintaining domestic tranquility. Ooh. desperate people eventually do desperate things, and these desperate things are rarely nonviolent. For the ultimate examples, look at the French Revolution and the attacks on white landowners in Zimbabwe and other places. You might also enjoy Google Penny Auction. He says, you're right on track. These people don't believe in government and are busily profiting by it. Thanks. I love thought-provoking emails. I think we've got someone on the phone here. We will find out presently. Hi, who have I got?
Hey, you got Scott from Salem.
Hey, Scott, good to hear from you.
Hey, Bob.
Good. How you been?
I've been good. I sent you an email a little while ago to tell you my news.
Oh,
I passed the bar.
Oh, yeah. What? Yay! I mean, I'm surprised you're just... How long ago did you find out? Have you been
looking? I found out at the beginning, second week in November.
Oh, okay, so you've had a little time to let it sink in.
Yeah, a little time to just be relieved I don't have to take this stupid thing again, basically.
Oh, that's such wonderful, wonderful news, Scott. I'm so glad to hear it. Of course, I was confident all along.
Well, yeah. I mean, everyone's confident except me, you know, because I'm the one who has to take the test again if I fail. So, you know, but yeah, it's funny because I talk to my classmates, and everyone feels the same way. You don't feel good when you pass the test. You just feel relieved you don't have to take it again.
Yeah, because it's such a miserable undertaking.
It is, and it's not like you feel smart for passing it. It's just that you feel like an idiot for having to take it a second time.
Right, right. And you're sitting there with other people who are taking it a second time, and you're all sort of looking at each other.
Exactly. You all know who you are, yeah. Hey, let me digress into an earlier topic.
Please do.
Talking about the debates and talking about... our dentist being left out. You know, I've been wanting to talk to you about this for a while because I'm really interested to see what your thoughts are on this. You know, a while ago, you were talking about Nader voters and what they did to the previous election in terms of basically losing it for the Democrats. And I have to say, you know. Just a couple things. First, you know, Dennis Kucinich, when he speaks, he's the only person on the stage where I actually agree with what he's saying. Almost everything he says, I think he's an eminently reasonable person, and it would be a fantastic candidate and a fantastic president.
Absolutely, and that was so missing today. I don't know if you watched or not, but it was.
I didn't watch today. No.
It was flat. It was flat. It was hopeless. It was.
And this is what concerns me about the Democratic Party, right?
Mm-hmm.
What you saw today was the Democratic Party. The Democratic Party doesn't. I mean, just as a. So here's my conundrum, and you help me with this, okay? My conundrum is. When it comes time, I know who I'm voting for in the primaries. I'm going to vote on it because I think he's what needs to be said.
Right. I won't get. When is your primary, Scott?
Oh, I have no idea, but I'll show up. It's you know, two Thursdays after Super Tuesday or something.
Okay.
Like that.
Yeah, because we got to wait till May here, so it'll all be a done deal, and I guess my primary vote will be symbolic.
Yeah. Yeah, no, I don't think ours count so much either. I mean, you know, in Massachusetts, it's late enough that I don't think it matters that much. But I'm into the symbolism of it, right? I'm into the aspect of my vote as free speech.
Sure.
And I need to tell the Democratic Party that when Dennis Kucinich speaks, he says something that needs to be said. And that's what I feel like I'm doing when I vote for him. Now, I know he's not going to win the nomination, right? I mean, you know, logic and rationality.
That's a tough thing to swallow back, though, isn't it, Scott? Because you know what he could accomplish, or you know what he would at least try to accomplish.
And I know what he would inject into the dialogue, into the rhetoric, right? And I myself feel that needs to be injected. You know, someone needs to say, why do we have a Secretary of War and not a Secretary of Peace. You know, why is it acceptable for us as a matter of national policy to say, you know what, there are countries we just will not talk to? That's just silly. It's just nonsense.
Well, it completely runs against the grain of everything that we were founded on, because, you know, people like Washington suggested, you know, talk to anybody, do business with anybody, don't get in bed with them.
Well, I mean, yeah, if you want to get into the market aspect, right? Everyone's a fair and equal player in the market. You don't shut people out just because, you know, because they have uncomfortable ideas. You should actually bring them in and have them join the dialogue, right?
Yeah.
So I just think it's a negotiating strategy and a sort of a modern view of how we need to get along in a global society. I just think it's dark ages thinking, right? And so here's my conundrum. My conundrum is, what happens when the Democratic Party, what it's done every time, when the Democratic Party delivers to us a candidate that's far to the right of where I think the Democratic Party needs to be, or where the country needs to be? I feel like the Democratic Party has moved further and further to the right. The center. You've talked about this a lot, and I think this is a really, really excellent point. When do we start calling people who are liberals leftists? Like, they're talking about nationalizing industry.
Yeah, wild-eyed, bomb-throwing Trotskyites or something.
The center has moved so far to the right that the people in the center can call regular liberals, people who just believe that there should be a social safety net, that we're in this together and we can do a lot more cooperating than by trying to push each other down.
That we still believe some of the civic civics lessons we got in grade school, that this is a government of the people, by the people, and for the people. That Abraham Lincoln, you know, was not just blowing smoke when he was talking that stuff, that what got put in the Declaration of Independence and the Constitution was not just a bunch of high-minded fluff to advance the business interests of John Hancock. These are real concepts, and because we believe in them, we're wild-eyed, crazy, again, leftists. I saw the Center for American Progress referred to in a story in the Washington Post, Scott, as the left-leaning Center for American Progress. Was that necessary? Can you not say that the report was put out by the Center for American Progress without the editorial comment and leave it to people to figure out whether they're left, right, up, down, or indifferent?
Right. Right. I mean, the other thing is they'll certainly call something a conservative think tank. They won't say that they're the right-wing, they're right-leaning. They won't say that these are people who want to, you know, fascist totalitarian government, right?
Right.
But on the other hand, I'll say these people are left-leaning, which means that they're the bomb throwers. It's really remarkable to me. And here's my question, though, right? I see that the Democratic Party has moved that way. And what happens when the Democratic Party puts up a candidate that's going to keep us killing people in Iraq for another 10 years? Either one of the main front runners is not going to really change things substantially there, and they're not going to change things fundamentally in terms of the way we express ourselves in the world and in foreign policy. What am I supposed to do? Now, here's my conundrum, right? Because you and I talked about this actually a while ago.
Yeah.
Do you suck it up and vote for hold your nose and vote for whoever they put up? That's what they say, right? I'm not going to like it, but I'm going to hold my nose and vote for whoever they put up. Like, I'm going to vote for Kerry, right?
Yeah, which is exactly what happened in 2004.
And so here's where I'm torn. I'm torn because, you know, I don't blame the Nader voters for voting for Nader. I blame the Democratic Party for not going and getting the Nader voters and winning. And I feel the same way now about Kucinich. I want to write in Dennis Kucinich. And I want to cost the Democrats this election. That's going to sound terrible, I know. But until
I understand the impulse, Scott.
Until they start coming back to us, we're lost. I mean, the people who feel this way just have to hold their nose and vote for whatever ever drifting to the right centrist Democratic Party machine candidate gets put up.
And it makes you feel sick.
It does.
I understand every last bit of that, Scott. And having just passed the bar, I have a feeling that you get this really well. The one thing that drives me back to the hold my nose position is imagining the Supreme Court appointments of Mike Huckabee.
Oh God. Yeah.
I mean, am I being mean?
I don't know. No, you're right. You're right.
I mean, he would appoint somebody who would put his, you know, who'd have his wife hold the bottle of strychnine and the serpent while he did the Bible and the hand in the air thing to take the oath.
Yeah, yeah.
And it's not the fairly temporal, transient quality of a presidency being 4 or 8 years, Scott. It's 40 years. It's 40 years.
Yeah,
and I heard Biden say today, you know, he said, I'm smart enough, I think I can get the troops out in a year. Well, that was at least a little bit hopeful.
Yeah.
On the other hand, you know, I know this chaps some people from when they hear me say it, because I don't trust Senator Clinton to get the troops out anytime soon. I just don't.
Yeah. Now, well, maybe if you just listen to what she said, she's not planning on getting the troops out.
I don't trust Senator Obama to do it either, because he's a very high-minded and very good-minded individual, and he'll get sucked into that national security structure, and any paradigms that he went in with, he won't come out with. Does that make any sense?
Yeah. No, I think that's right. I feel the same way about it.
I think you've got to have somebody in the Oval Office who's going in with a set idea of, I will accomplish this hell or high water.
Yeah. Yeah.
And devil take the hindmost. I'm confident. You know, any man who would stand up to the Municipal Power and Light Company and stand up to multi-billion-dollar bankers in Cleveland and say, "Do your damnedest," knowing full well that literally gets a mob hit put out on him, like it did
right.
Dennis.
Right.
I trust that guy to do the right thing.
Right. I mean, you trust that guy to tell us, I hate to say it, what Jimmy Carter told us those years ago. You know what? There's going to need to be some sacrifice here.
Yeah.
You know, because that was the other thing you were saying earlier, you know. It's amazing that people want to believe this delusion that we don't have to sacrifice, right? I mean...
And see, that was the thing last night, and again, you know, it was such an eye-opening experience for me, because A, most of the debates have been on at a time that I'm on the air, and last night I was just, you know, too keyed up and too exhausted and had to wait for some software stuff to happen, so I sat there and on YouTube watched segment after segment of this dog and pony show that the Republicans had, and that sacrifice question just sent me reaching for the bottled in bond again, because they were asked, do Americans have to sacrifice, and if they have to sacrifice, what do they have to sacrifice? And the answers were ranged, Scott, from everything from, heck no, we don't have to sacrifice, it's, you know, river of beer over your grandmother's paisley shawl. America is wonderful. I thought they were going to start singing, or, you know, to have a seance and raise up Ronnie Reagan or something. All the there were keywords out there. You know, every time Rudy Giuliani got a chance, he said Islamofascism, and so when, there are sacrifice, and I, okay, here it is. I love these conversations with you, Scott, because I get to process. Here it is. There's a question about what will the American people have to sacrifice. And the same question was asked of the Democrats today, and the answer to that question is not what will the American people have to sacrifice. The answer to that question is why is a significant segment of the American population already sacrificing to the point that we're pale in the face from the bleed out?
Right on, yeah.
We have sacrificed everything we've got to give, you know, whether it's here in the hills and the communities being devastated by the endless search for endless coal, or what's happened on the Gulf Coast, or what's happened to the middle class, or some poor guy who saw a commercial for Ditech and refinanced his mortgage, and now he's losing his house. You know, there is an abundance of sacrifice taking place in this country already, and nobody seems to be willing to talk about it.
No, I mean, that's the point. I mean, the point is that when you look at the Democrats will say, you know, the Democrats are saying basically the people on the upper tax brackets have to sacrifice because we want to take away the tax cuts that were given to them. Right? The Republicans say, oh, no one has to sacrifice. But what's actually hidden in that message is the people in the upper tax brackets are going to be fine. And the fact that the people in the working people no longer have the services that they used to have and the support network that they used to have and the jobs that they used to have, that's not a sacrifice. That's just, I don't know what that is, but we're not going to call that a sacrifice, right? And so I think it's interesting. I mean, it's interesting that both parties want to trade off the sacrifices of one group of people against the sacrifices of another. The fact is, we all have to sacrifice.
Yeah. Right?
I mean, this is a. I'm sorry. It's a globalization is an interesting concept. This is a global world we live in, right? And you know, the fact is that American workers are now sacrificing for a huge transfer of wealth to developing countries.
And see, the thing is, had Dennis Kucinich been in that debate today, Scott, I have no doubt whatsoever that we would have heard an answer that is similar to what you and I are discussing right now.
Exactly. Someone needs to say that. And I think I'm disgusted with the Democratic Party, because the Democratic Party is the ones who kept him out of that debate.
Oh, yeah, because he didn't, I mean, and that's the thing I don't get. He's qualified on the ballot, I do believe, in Iowa.
Mm-hmm.
But he hadn't rented a storefront in downtown Des Moines. And so, therefore, he didn't have a presence in Iowa.
Yeah.
Is the Des Moines Register trying to tell me that there is not a single solitary Kucinich voter in Iowa? Not one?
Or not even a single Kucinich canvasser or whatever. I mean, there are people. There are Kucinich supporters in Iowa for sure.
Sure.
You know.
But the Des Moines Register just looked at them and went, and you know, the heck with you. You know, we're not going to talk about, because you know Dennis could have talked about some real issues there, because every once in a while ethanol came up, and I get the idea. I don't know. Maybe that ethanol is not so popular in Iowa. You would think it would be, you know, just. It would be the bee's knees there, what with all the corn it requires. But what you're finding out is that I think ethanol has been rough on family farmers.
Has been what?
Rough on family farmers.
Huh.
Because nobody answered the ethanol question saying more, plant more number two hybrid field grade corn.
Yeah.
And Dennis could have talked about that stuff at length and with expertise.
Yeah.
But sadly, no. And
yeah, you know, and then this is the same party that we put back in control of Congress.
Well, and that was something
what we've asked it to do.
And there's your move to the right answer, Scott.
Yep.
A lot of people thought that the Democrats got returned to the Congress only by virtue of having shifted rightward.
Mm-hmm.
And we've seen the effectiveness of it. These people have bent over backwards to give George Bush everything he wants, and they get in return, slapped again. The anecdote about Harry Reid speaking to Bush at the reception for the Dalai Lama, I think I mentioned that maybe late in one of the other programs last night. Harry Reid went up to George Bush and said, you know, listen, we need to talk about the children's health insurance bill. And Bush just looked at him like some bum and said, I'm not going to talk about it. You talk to my staff. And never said another word. Now, George Bush stood in front of the nation and said, they need to come to me and negotiate. Well, Harry took his little hat in his hand and went and negotiated, and like a cur dog, got slapped.
Right.
And Harry is one of those centrist, slide-to-the-right Democrats. just like for all the talk about what a, you know, San Francisco liberal she is, Nancy Pelosi is too.
Exactly. You know, this is, I think they've missed a tremendous opportunity. I mean, the children's health care plan was a perfect example. What I wanted them to do is I wanted them to put that thing in front of the president over and over again.
Make him veto it every 2 weeks from now until November.
Exactly. And you say to